hard-hitting medical truth, cutting through conflict and confusion to the understanding you're searching for. Join Dr. Peter McCullough, world-renowned medical expert and practicing physician, for this edition of the McCullough Report. Your life may depend on it.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is the McCullough Report. I have a real treat for you this show. I can tell you, I've been waiting for this interview. Highly recommend it. Actually, it took coordination between a mutual friend to get Rosemary Gibson to come on with us, because the topic has come up over and over again about the drug supply in America. Where does it come from? What are the issues? So Rosemary Gibson has joined us, and I can tell you by brief introduction, she has had a tremendous amount of experience at Robert Wood Johnson, congressional testimony, editorial responsibilities at the Journal of the American Medical Association. She is authoritarian. She is not authoritarian, but she is authoritative on the issue of drugs and what she's basically called the treatment trap. So, Rosemary, welcome to the show.
Dr. McCullough, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Well, you know, why don't you fill out a more detailed resume of you know what you've done in life and why we're here now?
Well, I'll start with why we're here, and then I'll work backwards and how I got here. I think it's a fascinating story. So, Dr. McCullough, you reached out to talk about where do our medicines come from and what's the role of China. And thanks to a mutual colleague of ours, a wonderful physician whom we both know, he had had me on his show several years ago about the book that came out in 2018 called China RX. And it actually predicted so much of what we saw in the subsequent years about drug shortages and the grave concerns about our supply chain over the last several years. And I had written other books, first on medical errors after the Institute of Medicine report, now the National Academy of Medicine, mm-hmm. the Paris Human report. And I said, I want to know who these people are. And that led to a public patient safety movement, which for many, many years, and no doubt lives have been saved. In addition to writing books, I had the pleasure of working at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation in Princeton, New Jersey for 16 years. And there I had the honor of leading our work to bring palliative care into the acute care setting. When we started this work back in the mid 90s, Jack Kevorkian was out doing what he was doing, and we had to find a better way. And so I was a young program officer at the foundation. I said, let's find a way to fix this. At the time, there were hardly any hospitals. Sloan Kettering in New York had a wonderful neurologist who was their palliative care program. So we had virtually nothing. And now I'm happy to say, after having the opportunity to lead a national effort to put palliative care in the nation's hospitals, now there's nearly 2,000 acute care hospitals with such programs. Mm-hmm. So my background is, I'm a good generalist, graduate of Georgetown, London School of Economics. How do we make change in society that makes it better for people at a societal level, have a real impact on the ground? And it's very hard. Not too many people do that. How do we do it from a national level and really make a difference, what matters to people in their day-to-day lives? And so we're here to talk about China RX, because our medicine supply chain is, we weren't told the truth. I just started working on this, finding out where our medicines were coming from. I was listening to some hearings on Capitol Hill, and I was shocked at what I uncovered and how much they've hidden from the American people.
30 years ago, let's go back 30 years ago to 1990. Where did generic drugs and where did prescription pharmaceuticals come from that we used in the United States?
Well, generic drugs were just getting started with the Hatch-Waxman Act that was passed by Congress on a bipartisan basis in 1984, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it took time for the system then to launch a generic drug sector. And at that time, a lot of brand name companies made their brand name drug, but they also sold the same drug under a generic version, the same mm-hmm. formulation, probably manufactured in the same So that's how it was. And the quality was, you could pretty much count on it much better than what we have now. Now, fast forward to the early 2000s. And of course, we saw some movement, very early movement in China and India with their chemical industries, but they weren't not so much into pharmaceutical chemistry. It was more chemical factories that were then, over the last 20 plus years, have turned into pharmaceutical manufacturing capability. But when I was working on ChinaRx, I'm going to start with antibiotics. Everybody knows about antibiotics. So I came across an extraordinary report written by Oak Ridge National Laboratories in the late 1980s. And it was a highly technical report, Dr. McCullough, where we were prepared for a national emergency. It documented where every single antibiotic manufacturing plant was in this country, what they were making, the volume they were making. And these are huge, facilities. These are giant fermentation plants. It had the names of the managers of the plant, their contact information, so that in the event of whatever, that we could adapt very quickly to ensure we have had a continuous supply of vital antibiotics like penicillins, tetracyclines. What would that map look like today? We have no capacity to manufacture from the beginning to end any antibiotic.
Oh, my Lord.
It's gone.
So the capability, the American capability is gone.
It's completely gone. And I tracked down how it happened. And I'm grateful to industry players in Europe who were very generous and transparent with data about what happened to their industry in Europe. And just imagine, this was a bar graph that showed how China dumped the raw material to make penicillin, because they had a great industrial strategy. I wish we, our country, had that industrial strategy. They dumped this product on the global market at below market prices. And you can see the line, the graph. They kept it low for 4 years. And what happened in that 4 year period? I came across an article in the New York Times written by a very wonderful journalist at that time. And he just reported on the closure of the last penicillin fermentation plant in the United States up in Syracuse, New York, right in that same time period. And that's what drove it. You have competition that is unfair competition because dumping is illegal. It's not a market practice, but we weren't enforcing our laws here as a country to have a level playing field in the marketplace. So that was the last antibiotic penicillin fermentation plant that shut down. This was a giant facility that supplied most of the world at one point in time.
What year was that, roughly?
That was in 2004. Bristol Myers
2004. Wow.
announced that it was shutting down that facility in upstate New York. And now this is a really interesting story. So think of it. We have no, and they also, by the way, what happened during that period was a manufacturer in India also shut down its penicillin. India, with its huge population, also could not compete with this unfair market pricing. And so they shut down. So you have a country with a billion people, and they couldn't make penicillin. So we not only lose the manufacturing, our industrial base, but you also lose the talent and the skill. Now let's fast forward to a couple of years ago. Remember the amoxicillin shortage? And patients and doctors were scrambling to get amoxicillin for patients, for children, for their loved ones. And it turns out there was a company in eastern part of Tennessee, Bristol, Tennessee, called US Antibiotics. And that came about when a company went bankrupt. It was owned by India. They were making the pills, the amoxicillin pills. And they said, "We can't do it anymore. We're giving it up." And come along some very, good Americans who said, "Well, we need to be able to make this here. So we're going to buy the plant and fix it up and make product." What was happening, Dr. McCullough, is at that time there were patients, ordinary members of the public, who were calling this manufacturing facility and saying, I can't get my prescription filled. Can I come and get some amoxicillin from you? They were actually going to drive to the manufacturing plant. They were so desperate because of the shortages. And of course, you can't do that. But you know what was really interesting, Dr. McCullough? Who was not calling? The federal government was not calling. The group purchasing organizations were not calling. The hospitals were not calling. And here we have these good people making amoxicillin just down the road in the East Coast.
Why
it's
not?
It's really quite, really absolutely stunning.
Right.
That we could not have the wherewithal to, and I have no financial interest with these folks. They're good people trying to solve a very, very serious problem for patients and for physicians.
But why not?
That's a very good question. I wrote an op-ed on this. And I said, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't the federal government calling? Why aren't we restocking the strategic national stockpile?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if you're a hospital in Tennessee and you've got right down the road, down the interstate, you could get amoxicillin for patients, and the system is so tightly controlled and so centralized with the purchasing organizations. It's really quite remarkable. And so this antibiotic story, Dr. McCullough, is just an example of where we are with our generic supply chain. And it's even bigger than antibiotics. So in February of 2020, which was a very pivotal time, there was a virus floating around the world. And I remember having dinner with a wonderful group of people who actually make prescription drugs. There are about five of them there. And these people, they're very dedicated folks, probably 150 years experience combined making medicines. So I went around the table and I said, look, there's this bug coming here. And tell me about critical care medicines, the ones that are needed for seriously ill patients in the hospital. Where do the key starting materials, not the active ingredient, I'll get to the, that in a minute. Where do the basic materials to make these critical care drugs come from? So they went around the table and every one of them said either 90% or 95% are sourced from China, one country. And one of the big revelations with China Rx, and we talk about India, well, India is an alternative. It turns out India depends on China for about 70% of these starting materials to make generic drugs. So whatever country it is, our supply chain is so centralized in one country, and I believe it's by design. Rare earths, people know about rare earths, how centralized that is. And that is true for thousands of our generic drugs. A very fine gentleman who, as the CEO of a very reputable manufacturing company, said that, because I asked him, how dependent are we? He said, if China shut the door, the world's pharmacies would be empty within months.
Wow.
Again, whatever country it is, that's not smart. That's a system that's designed for catastrophic failure, let alone a pandemic. And this was so important that I discovered this, and I was sitting at the desk where I am now. And I said, how come no one knows this? How come nobody's doing anything about it? I do this work as a private citizen.
Mm-hmm.
If you see something, you got to say something. So I put it out in China Rx. And nobody's refuted that. Now, I testified before Congress. And the FDA was testifying, and they said, oh, it doesn't look too bad. We only get about 23% of our APIs, it looks like, in China. Well, it's not exactly true. What they didn't tell Congress and the rest of us is that where are these, let me step back, the pills we take, the finished pills, they're made with active pharmaceutical ingredients. Now, it's really great. Everybody knows about APIs now. That's what gives a medicine its therapeutic value. But they don't fall from the sky. They're made with chemicals and, maybe raw materials and plants and so forth. And that's where our dependence lies.
Yeah.
And the FDA knows it, but they would not say it publicly. And that is the story of China RX, about our dependence on a single country, globally, everybody. And that's not a situation that is good for anybody. It's not even good for China, because there's so much responsibility they bear then in supplying the world with these vital products that are necessary to sustain life.
But why China and not countries in South America or Africa or even India? Why China?
Because China is very wise. They decided that we are going to have an industrial strategy for key sectors, whether it's pharmaceuticals, high-tech products, computers. And look around your house, so much is made there. They had a deliberate strategy because they have over a billion people and they wanted to grow the economy. So how do you do that? You put them to work. And you have a lot of talented chemists there in China. So let's put them to work. And what they've done is, for their own people, is remarkable. But there's been unfair trade practices. You know, we can't even make vitamin C anymore, because the ascorbic acid, which is the active ingredient, that's sourced from China largely. So many things we cannot make. So they had a policy. They wanted to do this to grow their country. And they put the resources behind it of a state capitalist system. And they've been very successful at it. And I have to admire it. And I wish our country had an industrial policy to assure that we at least have some manufacturing capability for these products that people need to survive, for life itself.
Can you think of another consumer product area where the dependency on China is so extreme and the consequences could be so grave if we ended up in some type of trade war?
Well, I think the communications devices, routers, and how those can be used or misused. I look at our electric grid. We all depend on electricity. And there was a movement to bar Chinese companies from supplying US utilities, but that has been ignored. So we are at risk in multiple ways. And certainly the military, Department of Defense, has come out and has said certain companies, we will not buy them because of security risks. And I bet that they're seeing some very adverse things happening or potentially happening that are a threat to the military's performance of its mission. So it's a very serious situation. And I've been trying to amplify it and to encourage not just domestic production here at home, but we need people to buy them. We need customers. Mm-hmm. That's why it was so surprising to see the antibiotic production facility in Tennessee needing customers at a time of a very serious shortage in our country and also the world.
Right. Now, you just because our listeners can be doctors, but a lot of, you know, lay people as well. So API stands for active pharmaceutical ingredient. What does GPO stand for?
That's a group purchasing organization. So, you know, we can look at China and, you know, maybe they're causing a lot of problems for us, but I think we need to point the finger at us and these organizations like group purchasing organizations. So how are our generic drugs sourced? There's just a handful of very large companies. Some of them are Fortune, you know, 10, 20 companies. And they scour the earth, Dr. McCullough, looking for the cheapest generic. It's solely based on price. And they'll buy it and they'll distribute it to hospitals, retail pharmacies, and elsewhere. And the assumption is that these products are fine, that they're manufactured properly. But I can tell you, I've spoken with US-based companies who know for a fact that these GPOs will go to US companies and say, well, can you bring your price down? We'll buy from you. We want to buy US, but can you bring your price down? It turns out US manufacturers may be competing with companies in other countries, companies that have had multiple recalls, FDA inspections that are extremely problematic. It's so off the charts. You asked about 1990, where were we? It was unthinkable that a manufacturing plant making generic drugs in the United States or Europe would have the kinds of quality and safety problems that we see now in our generic supply chain. So that's the role of the GPOs, the PBMs, and there has to be much better attention to the quality and safety of our generic drugs, not just where they're coming from.
Let's stay on amoxicillin as an example. Everybody knows that as a common antibiotic. Approximately how many different generic company sources of amoxicillin are there?
I can check when we get off and send you that information. There's a website called Daily Med.
Okay.
Daily Med, and it's hosted by the NIH.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put in the search bar amoxicillin, and you want to make sure it's human drugs because they have human and animal
right.
drugs, but human drugs, hit enter. And what should come up with all the amoxicillin products that are for sale in the United States. And you'll see the names of the companies. Now, you might have a manufacturer. A lot of times you have these repackagers. They didn't make them, but they're repackaging them.
Okay.
Now, it gets a little confusing because you can have a company that puts their name on it and they say, well, it's made for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to dig a little deeper to find out really who the manufacturer is. But that's just a first cut, and you can see the labels. There are pictures of the labels. And you'll have some sense of who's making them. And when I was working on China RX, I just called up some of these companies, whatever name was on the box, and I said, you know, where do you guys make this stuff? And sometimes they would tell me, and some would just say, well, that's we source globally, and we don't talk about it. Because they don't want us to know.
But you know, I've been involved in a couple intellectual property cases. So I know, for example, one cardiovascular drug, you know, at the time, the year it went, quote, generic, I think in the first year alone, there were 12 different companies, generic companies. I would imagine for amoxicillin, it's dozens and dozens and dozens. Yeah, I bet it's a lot.
Oh, I think you're right. And there'll be repackagers. And if you look at the NDCGO, National Drug Code, that will give you some indication that gets a little more specific. Okay. And we really need to unearth that. But you're absolutely right. There's many of them.
Right. So here's my point. If amoxicillin, if there's dozens and dozens of manufacturers, what are the standards for FDA inspection for quality and purity?
It's very concerning, Dr. McCullough, what's happening in recent years. The FDA's process to assure the quality and safety of our generic drugs and every other drug, a primary tool they use is on-site inspections. So say you're a manufacturer here in the United States, in Chicago or Texas. The FDA can come in tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. and say, we're here to do an inspection of your manufacturing facility. And there's very rigorous criteria for what they call GMP, good manufacturing practices. It looks at the process of what you're doing. Do you have your quality controls in place? And do you document? And do you clean your equipment? And what are your solvents? It's a very technical process. And on the basis of that inspection, the FDA will write up a report. And if you do great, then that's great. And some, you might get a warning letter, which can result in the company having to make changes and improvements. Or in some cases, if it's really bad, like the Valsartan case, when there was the blood pressure medicine and the carcinogen that was found in it, well, the FDA was sort of late to the game on that. They got over to the manufacturing plant after this news came out, and they banned everything from that manufacturing facility. So now that's what happens in an inspection in the United States. Because of what we've been through the lockdowns over the last couple of years, the FDA has not been able to inspect hardly any manufacturing plants in India and China.
Oh, my Lord.
Mm. And also the FDA has to, if you're a federal employee working at FDA, going to travel to those countries, you have to get a visa and you have to have permission because you are entering as a representative of the U.S. government into another country. And so there are unannounced inspections. You just can't show up in India and China and say, we're here to do this.
Do you have any idea how big the team is at the FDA that does, you know, foreign plant inspections?
they don't differentiate between their teams of domestic or foreign, but I will say this, it has been reported publicly that they have difficulty finding people that want to travel to certain countries. Mm-hmm. And here's the wrinkle with China. I was impressed that FDA Commissioner Califf last year at a hearing in Congress was very clear that the FDA had been blocked from going to China. And that was as of last March. So they haven't just been able to get in for a couple of years.
Is this retribution for sanctions or just kind of visa bureaucratic?
It's not visas. It's just we're not allowing you in.
Oh, my Lord.
And so there has been a backlog, and the FDA is not clear about its data of 1,000 manufacturing plants, particularly foreign plants, that have not been inspected in several years. That's enormous. And here's the other wrinkle that I think is very concerning. Also, by the way, I was surprised that Dr. Califf was so candid to say, you know, if you go to China, you need translators. And he hinted that maybe it's hard to navigate the translators and whether they're translating accurate information. And he also cited a lack of transparency. I think the real issue here now is last July, the State Department issued a travel advisory for Americans traveling to China because of its new anti-espionage law.
Oh, wow.
Under that law, if you take something out of the country or any kind of information, it could be considered espionage, and you don't know what the rules of the road are. So here it is, the U.S. government is issuing a travel advisory to Americans because of the risk of detainment. And so without question, that is likely to be a deterrent to federal employees that are willing to travel to certain countries, particularly China, to conduct these inspections. And the FDA employees that do these inspections, they're unionized, so they volunteer. They can't say, so-and-so, you have to travel, you know, next week to conduct this inspection. So they have to volunteer. So the regulatory system that we've grown up with, that we knew back in 1990, which was very rigorous, in my view, has just fallen apart. And I believe that the FDA's ability to protect the American people, and I say this with great regret, and it's often because of conditions outside of their control, that the FDA's ability to protect us is dropping precipitously.
Now, Rosemary, let me ask you, what about inspections of the finished product that comes into the United States? What about random inspections of bottles or packages? What's done there?
My understanding is that at the border, that there are some checks and balances there, but what you catch there is just such a small fraction of what comes in this country. And then there's a practice of port seeking. It's like an amoeba. You know, if you remember the amoeba in basic science class, if you run up against a brick wall, you go back and you try another one. So they go port shopping. If we can't get it through one port, we'll go to another port and hope we get through. So, you know, I really put the onus on the U.S. companies that are purchasing products that are so vital to life and to our health from companies that are not being inspected. In my view, they are unregulated products as a private citizen.
Hmm. Well, again, let's use amoxicillin as an example. Let's say someone's in the hospital. I want them to get amoxicillin, and we trace it. The hospital has a contract with, let's say, Premier. It's a GPO. And Premier then sources this from one of 36 different manufacturers. And for the amoxicillin pill that I subscribe, it came from manufacturer XYZ. Premier procured it. You know, it had several of its, you know, subsidiaries ship it. It's stocked at the hospital. The patient takes it and whoops, it's contaminated. When that happens, who's responsible? Who's actually responsible for the tainted drug?
That's a great question. China Rx opens up with a story of a Johns Hopkins trained physician, who's a radiologist out in Arizona, who went into the emergency room at the Mayo Clinic out there in Arizona late one night for some relatively benign condition, and he was admitted. Long story short, he got heparin the next day.
Mm-hmm.
This is a blood thinner that's so ubiquitously used in hospitals. And within a very short period of time, he was in complete heart failure. His kidneys were failing. Mm-hmm. His lungs were failing. He was put on life support, and the following week, his heart was removed.
Mm.
And his wife, who's a physician, shared this whole sequence of events with me. And she believes that what caused her husband's eventual death, terrible death, was from contaminated heparin.
Mm-hmm.
And her case was one of the few where it went to court and it was actually settled out of court. So who's responsible? Is it the hospital? Well, in this case, they sued the manufacturer. Is it an American manufacturer? I mean, this is public record. It was Baxter Healthcare. And they had moved their API, active pharmaceutical ingredient supplier, from the United States to China. And in internal emails, allegedly, it was referred to as the cheap stuff.
Oh, my Lord.
And the FDA had by that time had not even stepped foot in that manufacturer.
Rosemary, we're going to have to take a break here for our sponsors. But we've been talking to Rosemary Gibson, and this is really a disturbing discussion regarding the drug supply. She is the author and I think probably the world's leading expert on the drug sourcing from China. Her book is called China RX. Rosemary, can you show the book so we can?
I sure can, yes. And I want people to know, Dr. McCullough, that proceeds are donated. We donate all the proceeds, that this book was written in the public interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote it so my mother could read it. And it starts out with a story that's woven throughout it, because this is so important to all of us. It's important to physicians. It's important to policymakers. I've briefed many members of Congress, senior executive officials, and others, but especially for us as patients.
Terrific conversation. We're going to take a break here. You've been listening to the McCullough Report. I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is the McCullough Report.
Wow, I just took my first supplement of Healthy Cell Heart and Vascular Health, a new offering. It comes in a bright new red package. You can't miss it. Red for heart health. This is, again, the Healthy Cell Microgel technology. It has 32 milligrams of niacin in the form of niacinamide, which is 200% of the daily requirement, vitamin B6, folate, which is methylated folate, vitamin B12, magnesium, 100 milligrams of magnesium citrate. I commonly recommend that for heart patients. 100 milligrams of potassium citrate, which is a small amount of additional dietary potassium. 1 gram of soluble fiber, which is amazing to pick up a gram of fiber just in the supplement. Beetroot powder, ahi flower seed oil, aronia berry juice concentrate, coenzyme Q10, we recommend that for so many patients on statins, vitamin K2, grape seed extract, and resveratrol, which is the active ingredient that's in red wines that's so beneficial for heart disease. It's all in the Healthy Cell supplement. I'm so excited. I will be recommending this to my cardiovascular patients. It's quick to take. It's readily absorbed. If you go to America Out Loud Talk Radio, the website platform for our show, click on the banner bar for Healthy Cell, and that'll lock you right into getting a discount on your very first purchase of Healthy Cell Heart and Vascular Health Supplement.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX Throat Spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop. That's AmericaOutLoud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Clean, pure, with premium ingredients. Global Healing's pure plant protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutLoud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is a McCullough Report and Courageous Discourse Substack. I'm Dr. Peter McCullough, your host. We are having a fantastic conversation with Rosemary Gibson, because fantastic because it's so interesting, but also so disturbing about how over the last 30 years, China essentially has a complete and total grip over our drug supply, the sourcing of the raw materials. Even if a U.S. company is providing it, the raw materials come from China. It wasn't the case 30 years ago, because their U.S.-based companies made the branded drug, and they also side-by-side made the generic. Companies like Merck and Pfizer, Warner-Lambert, companies of old. Now, Rosemary, who in the government is responsible for the drug supply as a national security issue?
When I testified before Congress, Dr. McCullough, I said we need a focal point in our government that's whose sole focus is exactly what you said. FDA is about regulating our drug supply, but we have to look at it from a national security perspective, from a public health perspective, and from a patient care perspective. And I thought this, the locus should be under, say, the National Security Council. But as yet, to my understanding, there is no focal point for this that has the authority to act.
Are there any trade and commerce laws that specifically applied to GPOs or group purchasing organizations?
I'm not aware if there are any, but I think the other issue I think is far more pronounced is the pressure that a lot of U.S. pharma companies are under, not the generics, but the branded companies. I'll tell you a quick story, an antibiotic related story. It's a very big U.S. pharmaceutical manufacturer. And they wanted to do business in China, like all the U.S. pharmaceutical companies were, because you've got, again, a billion plus people, growing middle class, consumer market, more focused on healthcare, they could sell a lot more in China than they could sell in the United States. But China's very smart. They said, okay, you American companies, if you want to come in and do business in China, we want to get something. We just don't want to buy your stuff and give you money. We want to, and this was part of their five-year plans, we want to become the pharmacy to the world and do that with generics. They've actually said that we want to become the pharmacy to the world. So you had very large pharmaceutical company that gave away its portfolio of generic drugs to China to make in return for access to the very lucrative Chinese market for its more higher margin drugs. Same thing happened with, you know, IBM laptops. I used to have an IBM ThinkPad and it was made in the US, but then IBM wanted to do business in China and it became IBM, it became Lenovo.
Right. Yeah.
So what did IBM do? They gave away to get higher value, higher margin products in China. They said, here, you can have our ThinkPad. Here's how we make it. In return for access for higher, supposedly higher value services. This has happened over and over again and how we've lost so much of what we use every day. So I think that's far more important than any trade laws. If we can fix the private sector purchasing practices and the way we're trying to do that, which I recommended in my testimony to the House and Senate, is that let's start testing generic drugs to see if they're manufactured properly, to get the bottom feeders out of the system, and to give assurance that what people are taking, when you take that pill, that you can trust that everybody did everything right along the way.
Yeah, it seems like we need testing beyond what's called the fill and finish. That is, we need to test the final product. And, you know, we have more government employees than we've ever had in the history of this country. We are rich with government agencies. I think about 486 of them. This idea that we don't have enough resources to put on this isn't going to wash, certainly with me as a consumer. We're loaded with government employees. We need to put them to work, the people who are in the space related to the biopharmaceutical sector, and get this solved in terms of the quality of what's coming in. And then we need people in trade and commerce. And we've got plenty of them to get on this in terms of trade practices, laws, to get this straightened out. Now, I've been a victim as a doctor of a drug shortage. So I'll be in the hospital and I have somebody having a seizure and I want to use Dilantin, which is an affordable generic drug. And then I'm told by pharmacy there's a Dilantin shortage. And the pharmacist is trying to scramble to other hospitals to get it or elsewhere. How does a shortage of a drug that we've used for 50 years, how does that happen?
The vast majority of drug shortages are caused by quality problems in manufacturing. Because what we've been doing is hammering down on the price we pay manufacturers. And if you hammer down too hard on anything, it eventually breaks. So you have a manufacturer, often overseas, that wants to really have a low price to get huge global market share. They're not investing in their plant and equipment. They're not investing in their employees about a culture of quality, a culture of safety. And so they get caught up and they get shut down or halted for a period of time. And what happens then? You don't get product from them, and that triggers shortages. So by the FDA's own data, one of the leading causes of drug shortages is poor quality manufacturing.
Hmm. So the inspections must be working at some level, whether it's the Chinese. Do the Chinese do any inspections of these products being shipped outside China?
What I have heard, and I have not verified, and I don't have independent knowledge of, but I've been told that there's a preference in countries like China to ensure that the products going to their own domestic population are safe, but what they export is unclear. But I think where we have opportunity and what's starting is independent testing of generic drugs. Some of your listeners, viewers may know about Kaiser Permanente Health System. It's a very large health system with about 13 million people. They started an innovative testing program for a select number of generic drugs that they purchase. And as I mentioned early on when we first got started, is that the Department of Defense has just launched a generic drug testing program. And both of these entities are using an independent laboratory that doesn't do business with manufacturers to conduct the testing. And what I would love to see, and it doesn't cost that much, this is not the full blown testing, but it's just doing some surveillance testing. Do we see any signals here where we might have problem? Does the drug dissolve properly? Is it have the right amount of active ingredient? Are there carcinogens like we saw with the valsartan? So just doing this baseline testing. You know, if you look around, if you go out and buy a new lamp or other appliance, they're tested. Underwriters Laboratory, you look a little tag on the plug before you put it in the wall. So if you leave the house, you know it's not going to burn down the house. Somebody's testing it. So I think there's opportunity here because the government's so hard to, as you said, so hard to get a handle on, to get them to do things that need to be done. I believe that there's opportunity for private independent testing with credible, organizations to do testing of our generic drugs to ensure their quality and safety.
For sure. And again, we have plenty of, our government budget has never been as high as it is now, just bloated with these government agencies. So whether they do it themselves or they contract it out and streamline the agencies. But getting back to this drug shortage situation, and I've actually had a show on this issue. Someone is really knowledgeable about the GPOs. The situation is, so I can't prescribe Dilantin. So what are my choices? More expensive choices. And so the more expensive choices, the group purchasing organization per unit makes more money when I choose a more expensive product. So the group purchasing organizations, they don't bellyache too much about these drug shortages because they're offering a formulary. Now I have to have a more expensive product. So some of this drug shortage, my understanding, is actually the group purchasing organizations, as they continue to negotiate, actually drive down the price so significantly that certain manufacturers drop out. And so there is a relative shortage to demand. So when there's a shortage, it doesn't mean we don't have any of it. It's just that the pharmacists now go on these incredible scrambles to try to find the doses. And so in any given city, there'll be numerous hospitals, and some hospitals will have some more of it than another. And so the pharmacists literally get in the car and drive to other hospitals to get the drug. I've been through this now over the last several decades, anticonvulsives, antiarrhythmics, antibiotics. I've seen it time and time again. So there's no doubt about it. Our drug supply is, in my view, a national security risk. Our bloated government is ineffective. Agencies have to get on this because at some point in time, if things really turn bad with U.S.-China relations, I think we could be in deep trouble. Now, as we have in the last few minutes, I want to have some of your comments and thoughts about non-prescription products, various forms of vitamins and supplements. What do we know about there in terms of their sources?
The over-the-counter products, I think, is what you're talking about. Yeah. And their regulation is nowhere near what it should be, and certainly a lot less than the prescription drug market. So we have very serious challenges about that, ensuring the quality and safety of the over-the-counter products. So vitamins, after working on China RX, I changed who I buy vitamins from. I'm not going to say it on air here, but they're of significant concern. I'll tell you a story about ibuprofen. I think you mentioned ibuprofen early on. As a very wonderful cardiologist at a very prominent hospital, a patient had heart surgery, and you're the expert here in cardiology, so forgive me. But he reported how this patient had gone home and ended up back in the hospital with shortness of breath and chest pain. Fixed her up. She went home. She ended up back again in the hospital. They did the same thing, fixed her up, went back home. Then she came into the outpatient clinic. And this particular cardiologist said, show me what you're taking. So what was happening? She was going home from the hospital and then going to the retail pharmacy to get ibuprofen. Again, this is just one case report, not tested, but mm-hmm. it shows how we have to really look carefully at these things. And so he saw this product she brought in the bottle, and he said, what I want you to do is take this one instead of this one. This was a no name, who knows? And as you know, there's a way to measure inflammation, and her mm-hmm. markers for inflammation were improving. And she took the proper dose and presumably a better product. And the question was it indeed this particular generic version of an over-the-counter medicine? Because you're right, so many different companies make these and there's no quality control. So we have really concerns about beefing up the testing and independent testing, in my view, the quality and safety of these products that we rely on when we have a headache, we have a cold, or we have a cough. You might have seen the reports about eye drops being tainted mm-hmm. and people going blind. So right. we really have to ramp up quality control. You know, I use the example of Costco. If you go in to buy some tires, you know, is the Costco going to buy tires that could blow out on the interstate when you're going 60 miles an hour? The reality is, and I say this not to scare, not to frighten, but to enlighten us. I say there's 100% probability, certitude, that in the pharmacy shelves of prominent hospitals, because we all get them from the same place, and retail pharmacies, there are products that are not made as they should be. They might be still fine to take, but others, you know, we just don't know. And so if we see something, we've got to say something and do something. And I'm so delighted to be mm-hmm. with you today, Dr. McCullough, to put this out there for our health, our well-being, our public health, and as you say so well, our national security.
Well, you know, you mentioned Underwriters Laboratory, UL. And, you know, when you have any electronic, I've got electronics around me, I bet there's a little label saying that it met a standard. Why can't we have a standard for prescription drugs and then for over-the-counter drugs so Americans can know that it's been accomplished at some standard?
I think that's absolutely right. And I see it as a complement to what FDA does. I think it's going to be very hard for government to do that, to pick, quote, winners and losers, which is good or which is not by testing. But I do think there's opportunity, given how huge this task is, thousands and thousands of products. It's impossible for the government to do it. You know, look at automobiles. You have the Department of Transportation. They do some testing. But we have the Insurance Institute that does crash tests. It's a private sector nonprofit group. Yeah. So I think there's opportunity to do this testing, to provide that assurance to doctors, patients, and also to send a signal to the bottom feeders out there, the ones that are really selling product that should never be sold here or anywhere else in the world. So let's hope that we can get some momentum on this. And the cost of testing for a 30, you know, a month supply is like pennies if you do large volumes.
And so, it's not every bottle, right? Isn't it randomly selected? And there's some methods to get high throughput testing.
Sure. What you could do is you have drugs are made in batches. Like you might make tomato sauce in batches for spaghetti or something. So you have different batches and you take a sample from each batch and then you test that to give a sense. It's not the be all and end all, but at least it's a start to begin mm-hmm. to bring back some integrity to our medicine supply. It was a great pleasure to talk with the guys and gals who are actually in the plants and made drugs mm-hmm. and had such pride in doing so over the years. I remember I talked to one very fine gentleman and he said, you know, I go into the drugstore now and I don't know what's in the bag. We can fix that. This is fixable. And with a private sector, push, I think we're on the road to that.
You know, I want to bring up, we only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to bring up two, I think, relatively large generic companies. And I want you to comment on them in terms of, you know, where they get their products from. Teva, which is an Israeli company, and then Dr. Reddy in India. What do you know about them?
I don't want to speak specifically on individual companies because they're all so varied and they probably have manufacturing plants in multiple countries. What I would do is I would look at their track record. It's very hard to find this on the FDA website. I think they have a hard job to do, and it's very hard for us to know what's going on there. But they're all under pressure, but I think there certainly are some that are definitely better than others.
But it seems like companies like these big companies could be held to provide these standards, to provide evidence of inspection standards, quality, impurity, more than what we have on the books right now regarding, the product that comes to the consumer. Most of these companies have, standard IP practices. They have listings they have to do in what's called the Orange Book and Hatch-Waxman Act and what have you. But this idea of, doing a better job on that finished product out to the consumer, it seems to me there's some real opportunities, especially for the big generic manufacturers. It wouldn't be too hard to round them up and then, apply some regulatory pressure.
I think we have to work on both sides of this. One is on the regulatory side, but, it's what's the incentive in the enforcement? Right now, people are selling substandard products and the enforcement is very weak. So are we really going to beef up enforcement?
Well, usually federal fines can work pretty good for enforcement. That's just one commentary, but it's clear something has to be done about it. Caleb's comments at the FDA fall far short in my view. By the way, he's a colleague, somebody I know. We just have to do better with all these government employees, this huge government budget, having this hang out here as a problem when we just have an enormous a number of paid resources for our government now. We simply have to do better. We've been talking to Rosemary Gibson, who's the author of China RX. Hold the book up again. I want people to see this. You can't miss the cover on this. This is a book that's not just her viewpoint. It's actually a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end that you can read and read readily and rapidly and understand this complex issue. I think this is going to come to a head, and I don't want to see more consumer product safety crises occur before it's ultimately solved. But I read editorials in the New England Journal of Medicine that says, well, we just need to have more generic companies and it's just not getting to the root problem of the generic manufacturers, the GPOs, the consumers. And I imagine everyone's just going to point fingers on each other when there's a quality problem. Rosemary, do you have any final comments for our audience?
Sure. Yes, I do. I want to say that while China RX tells a story, there's more than 900 footnotes in China RX. So this is authoritative. You're a scholar too, Dr. McCullen. So I think the public deserves to have that high standard. And yes, there's a lot of finger pointing, and the same people get called to testify before Congress, and they're basically protecting themselves or their systems. And so I wrote China RX to really put it out there about what is that root cause. And I'm really honored to be on the program with you today. And I look forward to a lot of us getting together to find some solutions to build confidence and secure our medicine supply chain.
Wow. I think you should be at the top of the list and any type of next move that we need to make on this. It's been a terrific conversation. Thank you so much for having us on the program. Let's get real.
Thank you.
Yeah, on America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is the McCullough Report.